Hello, everyone. I have another awesome guest in the studio with me in Austin, Texas. I want you all to welcome Kathy Terry. Kathy was former co-founder of P. Terry's and now is running a gifting app for charity called In Lieu, and she is the founder and CEO of that. Kathy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Well, that's I am as well. You know, we were put in touch. I want to give a shout out to Monica from Down to Donate who put us in touch. You know, one of the really fun things about running Charity Charge, and I'm sure you've experienced this as well, is this whole social impact space. There's a lot of cohesiveness, collaboration, social entrepreneurs across the country that are I'm constantly interacting with. And, you know, oftentimes they're saying, you need to meet so-and-so. So when I spoke to Monica, she told me about you. And we spoke earlier this week. And then here you are a couple of days later in the studio. So thank you so much for just being open-minded to chat with me today.
No, excited. Always like to find my peeps, right?
Well, I really felt it that way, you know, and I think that's a good segue just to kind of go into things. I think we'll do things maybe a little bit different on this podcast. And just that when we got to speaking, you know, a lot of it was about some of the macro trends that you're noticing about, you know, human behavior, habits around charitable giving world, things of that sort. But I want to take a step back. I mean, do you mind sharing with the audience, when you think about the, I imagine, you know, you were in an operating role or working within, you know, P. Terry's to grow that. Do you mind mentioning just briefly, like for the people that aren't in Texas, so to speak, what P. Terry's is, and then talk about like what opened your mind to start In Lieu and how you got the inspiration for that?
Sure. So P. Terry's is the brainchild of my husband, Patrick, and it's a fast food burger chain. But the focus is really on quality and also our employees. So the mission behind P. Terry's was really about serving high quality food at a reasonable price in a cool space. And we learned early on that if we were going to be successful, it was really going to be the 20 other people showing up to work. So from the very beginning, it was all about building a business to support our employees. And we always had a giving back piece to our business, which was really, really important to me. And it really is kind of the culture that we've built at P. Terry's. We have 16 locations now throughout Austin and starting to expand outside of Austin. But giving back has always been a priority to me. And I think when the idea of In Lieu came about, because I found myself just frustrated and seeing a problem that nobody was addressing. And it was kind of twofold. One problem was the way I was showing up, because I felt it was really inauthentic. And I was really kind of sick of the obligatory gifting that I was, that we were all doing, not just me, but everybody around me. And I was like, this is crazy because I don't need anything. I don't want anything. And the stuff that I'm giving doesn't really represent how I feel for my friend. It doesn't represent my love or gratitude, appreciation. And then also I started looking into what we were buying, right? What we were purchasing and all these obligatory gifts. And that's when I was blown away because I was like, wow, the gifting market is like a $3.8 trillion market. And most of these gifts we're buying each other are unwanted, unused, they're returned, they're landing up in our landfill. And so my idea was, why can't I show up differently and maybe in lieu of all of this material stuff that none of us want or need, give a donation on behalf of my friend and thereby, you know, showing a better representation of how I feel, a more meaningful gift because now I'm giving to their cause, but also I'm, you know, not depleting natural resources and I'm not putting more waste out there. And so that's where the idea of In Lieu came about.
And we're going to go into that in a second. But one thing that I want to talk about, which, by the way, yes, I want to fully acknowledge everything you just said, because I am on the exact same wavelength as you in the sense of the mission and the values and the whole vision and ethos behind Charity Charge. Very different products in a sense, but same philosophy underlying this over consumerism. Just in general. And then, you know, your focus on gifting. I'm going to go into a few things that are going to be pretty interesting. But I do, for the audience, want to just reference, you know, as you're talking about P. Terry's, you know, I told you this on the phone, I really want to acknowledge your husband for a second, because years and years ago, when I originally had this concept predating Charity Charge, I was just reaching out to a lot of social CEOs, founders, social entrepreneurs, people just in the Austin area, trying to get advice, trying to learn from them. And I could probably look through the, I don't know if I would still have that. Let me see if I still have this one. So long story short, I reached out to your husband, and I'm trying to look through my old emails right now to figure out how it all came about. But I think I either called the main line somehow, one way or another, he got on, and he said, "Yeah, just meet me here, you know, next week at this time. I'll buy you lunch and we'll talk." And I showed up and probably chatted with him for a good hour, and he bought me lunch, and I just asked him about his whole, you know, kind of philosophy behind P. Terry's and everything. And number one, I found it super inspirational at the time, because I remember him saying, you know, look, I was working in the marketing and advertising world, and I always wanted to own like a burger joint. It was just kind of like my passion. And, you know, I think he started it, I don't know his exact age, but, you know, he wasn't like 20 when he started it. It was after having, you know, a successful career, but I think recognizing, hey, this is what I really want to do, but also taking so much so, I mean, the brand, the positioning, all the things we're talking about come out of P. Terry's, because it's like really coming from initially like this marketing, branding, doing the right thing kind of philosophy, which I think is super cool. So I just want to acknowledge and give a shout out to your husband, because I still remember that. And I always think about my middle school principal always used to say, you know, character is what you do when no one's looking. Mm-hmm. You know, and that was so many years ago, and it was just like a one-on-one interaction. But it was really meaningful for me. And I think that, you know, as you talk about the values of P. Terry's, like, it's so obvious that it's authentic and it's not bullshit. And so maybe belabor the point a little bit there, but I really wanted to just let the audience know that, you know, he's an awesome guy. And then when we got connected, I knew you would be great, because, you know, two people together obviously are going to find compatibility and similarities. So it was no surprise to me that we had a lot in common as well.
Yeah, he's a good guy. But it kind of comes back to the whole thing about access, right? Like, you know, I think it's really important, and Patrick and I try to do this all the time, is give access to people, right? And because for me, I feel like if, you know, it doesn't matter how hard you work and how passionate you are, if somebody's not going to open up that door that you're banging on, then it doesn't matter, right? And we're all born with certain levels of access. And some of us have way more access than others. And I feel like success is really the access you have and taking advantage of that access. But I also want people to realize that we're successful because of our access. And because of that, we need to give access to other people, right? And so it's having those meetings and encouraging people. And, you know, I try to respond to emails and I try to have meetings with people because I want to be able to give them access that I might have to help them along the way.
I love it. No, and I really appreciate that. So let me just, with all that being said, it's coming from such a warm place, which is something that I'm really appreciating about just getting to know you more. Do you mind if we shift gears though, back to kind of In Lieu and, sure, and everything that's coming out of that? So what was the original kind of inspiration for it that you said, you know, did it come to you kind of like an epiphany?
Sure.
And you followed it?
Yeah. I was out on a long run and I realized I was having to go to a holiday party that night and I didn't have a hostess gift. And I was like, shit, what am I going to do now? And it's not like this is a once in a lifetime thing. I mean, it happens all the time. And gifting is not my love language. So I get anxiety around gifting. And so especially the obligatory giving, it drives me insane. And so I'm out on a run and I'm thinking, okay, this is a house that a friend of that I'm going to that I actually met serving on a nonprofit board. And so I'm thinking a better gift to give her would be a donation to the nonprofit that we're both serving for, than to give her a regifted bottle of wine or a scented candle, which is what I was going to have to do because I didn't have the time to go buy anything. And so, you know, that was my MO. I knew that there was a bottle of wine or a candle that somebody has brought to my house for the same reason. And so that's when I got the idea. Like, I wish that there was an app where I could basically send her a text message and say, "Hey, Gretchen, super excited to see you tonight. In lieu of bringing you a regifted bottle of wine, I made a donation to your favorite charity." And that's what spurred the idea. And I could not find a platform that would allow me to do that. Because at the time, if I wanted to do that, I would have to go to the website, fill out a long profile, you know, say that it's in honor of my friend, Gretchen, but then I have no control over how that message gets sent. I don't know if it's going to be in an email that goes to her spam, or if she's going to get it in a letter thinking it's, you know, all the mail that we get.
Yep.
And just get trashed. And then she never knows about my gift. And so I wanted to be able to control that message. And so that's kind of where the idea started.
How long ago was that?
That was probably 3 or 4 years ago. And then there were so many opportunities where that same idea would come about, right? I'd have to go to a friend's house or going to a luncheon for a birthday. There were just so many opportunities because we know obligatory gifting, it's the Valentine's days, the birthdays, the Mother's Day, the Father's Day. There's always so many events. And so it kept coming up, and that's... And I kept looking for it, right? Like I would go search the internet and I would search the app store looking for a way to be able to do this. And I actually tried to give my idea away. I went to the Girls That Code and said, hey, will you build this? Because I really just wanted the tool. I necessarily, you know, my intent was not to build a technology business. My intent was not to be a founder and CEO of another business. Like we had a business that was very successful and right. I was very content. But it was just such a burning passion and need that I felt like, crap, I'm just going to have to build this.
That's all. You know, that's how it goes a lot of the time, you know, which I think is really cool for anyone listening. That's because I get a lot of messages from people that are very much in concept idea mode and have been stuck in that for a very long time. And there are a variety of reasons, I think, why people stay stuck in that mode. I think yours was candidly quite rare. You're like, I already have a successful business. I'm busy. I have, you know, sources of income, ways to put food on the table, something that's taking up my time. And then this is really a passion project. I think a lot of other people are just afraid to start, right? Afraid to quit their job, things of that sort. So I think that your perspective on this actually is quite unique. And it's something that I am struggling with a bit here now running Charity Charges. I see all these other opportunities and just trying to stay focused on our core, you know, business and mission too. So anyway, it's just an interesting point. Do you mind, you know, so first off, how can people get in lieu if they're listening to this right now and they're like, how do I download this?
Right. So we're in Google Play and the iTunes store. So you just search in lieu, I-N-L-I-E-U. We also have a website you can download from there. You can also give from our website as well. So you don't have to download the app, but the app is way much cooler than the desktop and it's super easy. Like you literally can give a donation on behalf of a friend in less than a minute.
And I just used it for the first time last night. I had downloaded it when we were on the phone on Tuesday and made my first in lieu yesterday, which was pretty cool. And I have to tell you that, I highly recommend everyone just go and download this app and give it a shot. I was really impressed with just the UI and the experience. It was super simple to use. And I gave an in lieu to the Nonprofit Council, which is a client of ours. And I was just down there this week visiting with them and catching up with Scott Mikanich, the executive director. So I thought, you know, who better to do this to and like just thank or send something to than one of the nonprofits that we work with. So it was super simple and easy. Yeah. And I really appreciated it. And it wasn't until like I really take pride and have a lot of fun in the naming of companies and branding. And it's fascinating to me. We went through a really interesting exercise and process in ultimately coming up with Charity Charge and building that positioning and that brand. Thanks to the Reese's that are in Atlanta. Pro Bono gave us a free session and Laura Reese came up with the name Charity Charge.
Oh, nice.
But which is a cool, cool side story. But it didn't hit me until yesterday that I was using the in lieu app, like what you meant. And it made me think of so many times at different sorts of events, whether happy events, you know, birthdays, weddings, or funerals, you know, sad events. It's, you know, in lieu of X, you know, please make a donation or, you know, in it's just
right.
It fit. You know, it was so apropos. If I'm sometimes pronounce that wrong, but I love it. I really do. I think it's really cool. So, talk to me a little bit about like how have you how long has the app been on the market? And from your perspective of being in Austin, what was your go-to-market strategy of just kind of initially getting the word out and trying to make people aware of this?
So we launched in March of 2018. And to be honest, I was completely naive because when I built this app, I felt like, I mean, I needed it, right? Like it, I felt like, you know, there's this need that there's a tool, right? That wasn't available to everybody. And so, and it's so interesting, you know, when you're building a product, you know, I did all the things I was supposed to do. I built a prototype and then I did market research. And so based on the market research, I was like, oh my God, I'm just going to put this app in the app store and go on vacation. Cause like everybody, I just assumed everybody was at a place in their life that I was, right? That they're just, all they needed was the tool. And once they learned about the tool, then I'm done. And I think I mentioned this to you the other day, like the market research, once you throw social impact into something, things get completely skewed, right? Because I can ask you, do you like chocolate or vanilla? Do you like red or blue? Do you like hot or cold, right? You know the answer and it's easy to answer. But then when you start throwing social impact in there, like, hey, would you give a donation in lieu of a gift? Or would you actually ask a friend to make a donation in lieu of a gift? Everybody said yes, right? And I think
I pause just for one sec.
Sure.
For anyone that's listening right now, please turn up the volume and hear the real behind the scenes story of social entrepreneurs and the challenges and the myths. This is gold. Go.
So what happens is there's a lot of projection, right? Because then once you bring in social impact, then people be like, yeah, that I do want to be that person, right? I do want people to make donations in lieu of a gift, or yes, I do want to ask. But the problem is we are so conditioned that in reality, we don't do that, right? We don't, you know, we talk the talk, but it's really hard to walk the walk because we've been so conditioned to do something else. And so it was so interesting to me when I did finally launch it. Everybody said, oh my God, I love this. This is so great. And they downloaded it and they may have given a gift, but then they go on with their life. Right. And they go back to the way they were doing. They run into Randall's and buy an orchid, or they go and buy that gift card because that's just what we've been conditioned to do. And so I had no idea how hard it was going to be to change that behavior. Cause I didn't realize how ingrained it was. And I also thought everybody was on the same journey, right? And so I had a big launch party and I got a lot of great press, and we still do. Like, we still get a lot of recognition, a lot of earned media. And I see people all the time and they're like, oh my God, you're killing it. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, and we are. I mean, we've facilitated over $230,000 in donations already. And that's with no ad spend. Like, we just haven't had the budget yet to really run any ad. But to back to that point is human behavior. Oh my gosh, like I had no idea how much psychology goes behind gifting. And you know, I'm still trying to crack that nut.
I agree with everything you're saying. I think that if, from my perspective, we went through an extremely similar pattern when we started with our consumer card. The beauty for where I sit, and look, I came into this in a different stage of life, both from a just age, business experience, but also economic standpoint of like what I needed Charity Charge to be able to do. I mean, you already had a successful business, like you said before, and this was more of a passion play where you were really trying to do it purely as a social impact. And if at some point it scaled and there was economic benefit to you, great, but that was not, you know, the mode. And while that was never for me with Charity Charge, of course, like I needed to make a living. Like this was my business, you know, and it's like a lot of, you know, entrepreneurs, and I was the same way. I mean, the irony of this whole thing is, you know, initially out of the gate, I mean, it was all my personal money. It was credit card debt. It was the typical path. You know, I took credit card debt to start a credit card company is like, you know, the kind of the dark side that now as we're emerging into very green pastures and I'm starting to get the hang of running Charity Charge, and we've got a good and growing product and market. you know, I'm more comfortable sharing a lot of these dark things that I've had to carry through, where, you know, it can be a very lonely place. And I think that's part of the interesting kind of 1-2 punch of social impact, which is what you're bringing up. You know, my perspective on hearing a lot of what you're sharing, for any of the other people, you know, operating social impact companies or considering doing one, is to be very, very cautious on the feedback that you get. I think I said to you, you know, I had just flown in on Tuesday and my flight was delayed. And so I had landed at like 1:30 a.m. Tuesday morning. And then we were talking on the phone at 10 a.m., you know, so be it. And, but, you know, I had said to you, look, if I had a pat on the back or if I had, you know, if I had a nickel for every time I got a pat on the back for the concept of charity charge, I would have been on a private jet, you know, here already. And so one of the big myths, and I think part of some of the challenges you're seeing, are taking a consumer product that's around giving to charity, entering that industry, and trying and seeing the challenges of consumer behavior. You know, I think one of the things we talked about is just the $400 billion industry that charitable giving is. And I know yours is gifting as well. So you've kind of got two fronts, which is interesting in your market. But I think for anyone that's interested in doing like a social impact company, and if you're coming to it not having economics behind you to kind of support your venture, like this is like all on the line type of mode, which a lot of entrepreneurs are deciding to quit their day job or whatever, I would just say be very cautious about the feedback and approach it in a way that you can do it in a part-time or MVP to start to really try to validate the market. One of the beauties, and I'm curious, like your thoughts as you think about growing your product as it is and maybe potentially putting into new channels to grow it or pivoting maybe a little bit of the feature set, is that, you know, for us, we started very much with this consumer product, which really I built for myself. I mean, I wanted it. I said, this is, you know, I had an experience where I had accumulated all these American Express points. It was the end of the year. I thought, geez, I got all these points. Let me book a trip. I went on Amex's points portal. All the travel dates that I wanted were blacked out, so I couldn't use these points. I went, this is a bunch of bullshit. I signed off of Amex's portal thinking like they'd completely ripped me off and like duped me. I checked my email at the top of my inbox as a note from Hill Country Conservancy that I was on their Young Professionals Epic you know, board or program, where I think as part of that, maybe it was $25 or $30 a month that I was contributing to them, and I would go to their events and, you know, things of that sort. And so that's where I got the epiphany for charity charge. I went, what a racket. I don't need all these points. Why not just have a credit card that automatically gives it away to the charity of my choice?
Right.
And when I looked at the market research, a third of Americans in the United States, which is over 60 million people, never redeem their credit card points. So it's over $16 billion in breakage, which banks love because they purposely create schemes and gimmicks so that they can pull that value back, which goes to fund their bottom line. So I always joke that what we're doing is, you know, more profits for nonprofits. But in the process of having the consumer card, we then learned from the market that said, hey, could you make a version of charity charge for our nonprofit to use? So it very much allowed us to really assess and understand and get real practical feedback to then start with our business card, which, tying the whole circle back, like Hill Country Conservancy is a client. So they use it for their purchases and expenses at no cost and no personal risk to their employees.
Right.
I want to take it back to In Lieu, but I think it's just important to think about the, you know, the mindset of someone trying to start a social impact company. And I love your perspective on it.
I mean, and it's really hard, back to your point, and back to that $400 billion charitable giving market, right? It's never, since we've been tracking charitable giving since the 70s, we have not given as a country more than 3% of our GDP. Ever, never. And so for me, I'm not trying to increase that $400 billion by directly asking people to give more, because they're not. They're not. I mean, we haven't, and we haven't grown as a country since the 70s. So what I'm trying to do is redirect money from the $3.8 trillion gifting market to the nonprofit market,
right? Which is very much like on the consumer side, what we're doing as well.
Right.
You know, and I think that that's a really important nuance that we should go into a little bit, is thinking about also from a mission standpoint, growing the market versus redirecting the market. Right. Do you follow me, what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Of like, what you're, do you mind, like, for someone that's kind of maybe newer to entrepreneurship. Talk a little bit about that. You follow me?
I think so. Keep going.
Well, what I mean is like, look, it's one thing to say like, hey, this industry, I'm just making up numbers here, is $100 million industry. We can basically copy someone doing that and we'll get a piece of their, industry, right?
Right, right.
Versus you're saying, okay, there's already $400 billion going to charity, but theoretically, totally separate from that, there's, like you said, what, 3.9 trillion?
3.8.
3.8 trillion. Let's be specific there. 3.8 trillion. Can we move some of that 3.8 trillion to the bucket of 400 billion, which means we're growing the charitable market?
Right. Right. Which is, creating a different segment, right? And I'm trying to be the Uber and the Airbnb and the Rent the One Ray, right? Like all of these brands changed our behavior, right? Uber changed the way we go from A to B. Airbnb changed the way we sleep in hotels, right? Rent the Runway changed the way we shop. And so I'm trying to change the way we give. And it's the same concept. It's really, really hard. And all of those brands have probably spent millions, if not billions of dollars trying to change a behavior. So I realize that this is not going to happen overnight. I realize that, I do think it's going to tip. I do think it's a trend that is going in that direction. But to your point about markets, yeah, I am trying to kind of create a new segment in the market, and not trying to just have a faster, better gadget. It's hard to do something like that.
Can you mind sharing a little bit? When you say that, it makes me think about a recent event that I went to, which honestly was a great event, but I'll just be transparent. It was a MasterCard event. They host us at a conference in Chicago. They gave us as gifts a bottle of Hermes perfume. I also got, which they allowed us to initial, so I gave it to my mom, which she was really like happy about. I don't know if she's really going to use it or not, but right. I gave it to her. They gave us a nice Nest candle that I gave to my girlfriend. And I told them this, by the way, I'm not,
right.
I was honest with the regifting. And then, they also gave me a Yeti like coffee cup that had the MasterCard logo that I don't think I'll ever use.
Right.
And then they also gave us a Bass Pro Shops sweatshirt. That's like frustrating me because it's literally just been sitting on the chair in my apartment. I'm like, what the fuck am I going to do with this Bass Pro Shops sweatshirt? I don't want it.
Yeah.
And now it's one extra step that I got to do to take it to a place to donate it.
Right.
And I wish I literally had just left it there. I'm like, what am I doing with a Bass Pro Shops sweatshirt?
Right.
I'm never going to wear this thing.
Which is one of those channels that we're trying to go after, right? Like, it's not only the obligatory gifts that the consumers are doing, but it's the obligatory gifts that all these brands and all these businesses are doing. I mean, we are trying to get businesses to go swagless, right? Instead of, the logo branded USB drive, I don't need that, right? I'd rather MasterCard give me a $10 gift code that I can redeem to a charity of my choice. Then I will tell everybody about MasterCard, right? I'll be like, oh my God, that's what's memorable. I'm not going to talk to anybody about the USB drive that I got, right? And then also that allows these brands to see what I'm passionate about, right? It gives them a window of their consumers. Like, if you would start giving gift codes for donations, then that gives you a window of making a connection, like corporate gifting. I am so going after corporate gifting. Like, for the holidays, I don't need another basket full of crackers and cheese that is just going to sit in our, on the table. Nobody's going to remember who gave it to us. And finally, somebody ends up throwing it away, but it's just wasteful, right? And so that's what I'm trying to do is get people to start thinking differently about what we're doing and why we're doing it. And if we want to make more stronger, lasting relationships with our friends, with our family, with our clients, with our vendors, with our customers, we need to start giving to causes that they love.
I think it's such an interesting natural progression and segue. And to me, that's where I also get really fired up about what you're doing, because I look back on that and it was all bullshit. I mean, when you total up all those gifts and you think of like an Hermes bottle of perfume and all of that, I mean, that easily could have been like a couple $100 when I add in all that together. My girlfriend said to me, she's like, this candle's like $60 or something.
Right.
I much more would have rather, than said, even if it wasn't something that I directly like, quote, cared about and say, hey, we're in Chicago. Chicago's suffering from this issue. We've now made this impact because of all of you in the room. Round of applause for everyone.
Exactly.
Let me pause for just a second. So now, actually, I want to shift gears a little bit because I paused so we could set up a new recording segment, and we were just jumping into a few different things, but talking a little bit about, I think, the kind of the growth and like the journey as the entrepreneur. And, you know, I was just sharing my thoughts on very much my get started, but be open-minded to feedback. And like, even as I was talking about like the podcast and like starting with basic equipment and things, and now realizing, okay, I can actually, maybe I should have this different equipment or we could do it differently. But there's a balance, I think, sometimes between just getting started, but also not being impulsive. And you were talking a little bit about your the journey and everything. Any comments or things that come out?
Well, no, it's true. And I think people that, you know, are entrepreneurs are very driven, right? We're very goal-oriented. And it's just like, go, 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 go to the goal. And it's really hard to just stay present and like you said, you know, really just slowing down and making sure what you're doing is going to get you to the next step. And because so many people want to give you advice, right? And give you feedback. And it's like, okay, how do I take this advice and feedback and use it constructively, right? And not impulsively, because we're so like entrepreneurs, we're so impulsive, right? We're just like, we got to go, we got to go, we got to go. And so, you know, it's like really just trying to stay present and conscious and just finding the joy in the journey. And it's hard because we're all, you know, we have that goal, like this is what we're driving towards. But it's a balance. It's all a balance. And I, even with In Lieu, when I first launched, you know, I kind of got that, oh shit, what did I just do? Right. And then you start, you kind of lose your confidence at times, a lot of times, and then you start leaning on people. And I found what happened to me is I lost my confidence and the vision of In Lieu and started relying on people telling me, oh, well, this is how you scale a technology business. This is how you scale a mobile app. This is what you need to do. You need to, you know, and all of a sudden I'm running around and doing things that aren't authentic to me, and they're not what I'm about and what In Lieu's about. And so I almost didn't have a breakdown, but I had to like stop and go, wait, what the hell just happened, right? Like my business just got hijacked by me, but it was based on all the feedback that I was getting instead of going back and going, wait a minute, you know, this was my intent and this is my vision and how can I get to my goal and still be true to myself and still be true to the mission. And it's hard. It's a hard journey.
It really is. I've found very similar pattern myself. You know, a term that someone that had told me, I think it might have been a gentleman in Austin that's been really kind to me, Josh Jones Dilworth, but he called it mentor whiplash. And we have that a lot. I mean, we have all these, both in Austin and across really the world, quite frankly, the rise of entrepreneurship as the scale to kind of get started. The cost to do it is virtually zero. When you think about like the emergence of e-commerce, Shopify, starting mobile apps, all of that, I mean, to start a quote business that could be scalable, or any business really, it's dramatically lower than it ever has been. So we have now all these hubs and like mentorships and accelerators and everything. And my personal experience on them is, look, I'm for programs that provide support and resources fundamentally. When I moved to Austin, I actually worked for one, ATI, the Austin Technology Incubator. It's a part of University of Texas. It's the longest running business incubator in the country. Mm-hmm. It's been operating continuously for 30 years. So know that that's my background. However, with all that being said, my personal opinion is I think they're bullshit. I mean, I really think that they're extremely, it's not for the wrong reasons, but it's like, everybody's going to give you their point of view. Mm-hmm. That's not what matters. What matters is what you care about, you know, and I could go on and on and on about this, but it's like interesting as we're having this conversation, it's making me reflect on like years past and mentors, quite frankly. One of the best pieces of advice I got actually was another gentleman. I sat down, we were a little bit further along. I had already had like a technology kind of MVP of the Charity Charge donation platform and everything. And I showed it to Cotter Cunningham, who I don't know if he still is, but at the time he was the CEO of Retail Me Not here in Austin. And he did not, candidly, he was like, I don't like this credit card model. This isn't going to make sense. He didn't say it was stupid. I mean, he was respectful, but he was like, you're here for my feedback and I just don't think it's going to work. And so I was kind of a little down about it. But then he looked at me and he said, but the worst thing you can do is fail doing what someone else's like vision of your company is. He's like, it's way better to fail pursuing what you believe in.
Oh, wow. That's great advice.
And I went, well, fuck, then I'm going to do like, I'm not taking your feedback. And I'm so glad I didn't. On the pure business side, I was like, I'm going to take your feedback that says, go all in on what Steven believes in and cares about, which has now created such a beautiful social impact company and something that I'm really proud of and something that's growing and just like all of these things. But it's very much baked in staying true to what you want to do. And when you do, I just think it just feels right. It just feels good. I even had a moment that at some point I'm going to share even more on this, like part of this journey where things have started to pick up. I mean, without getting too much of the details, because I don't like to talk about it much, but you know, effectively at a point where we're profitable now and, you know, really good things are starting to happen. And I'm starting to really understand the market and grow and be a better entrepreneur, business leader. All of these things are happening. You know, I had a moment about a month ago where I was considering bringing in outside capital. And one of the people I went to, these were surface level. I'm not saying like it was literally on the table, but was like, hey, I would buy this company. You can roll it into mine. We can have it as a subsidiary, but we're going to rebrand it this. We're going to go after this market. And I just was like, I respect you because that's your company. I understand why you want to do that. Like, that's your vision. I'm like, I'm charity charge. I'm here to help nonprofits. Like, this is my market. This is what I'm doing. I'm wearing the shirt right now. I'm not like hanging up the shirt in the closet.
Right.
And so in the moment, it was like, whoa, I'm humbled. Like, this person wants to buy the business. This person wants to like really invest capital. Like, oh my God, could this change like my livelihood in the moment or everything? But who gives a shit? Like, I have something, and this is what I would share, making this a little bit about me, and I appreciate your time now, is like, I have something that I love doing. So even if someone walked in today and offered me $100 million for this business, why the fuck would I sell it? Like, what's the point?
Yeah.
I have something that I really love doing and I enjoy doing. Like, what am I going to do with $100 million? I mean, I would find stuff. If there's someone out there that legitimately wants to give us $100 million. But my point is, like, if you find something that you love doing and you're passionate about, it's so great to kind of feel in a sense where you kind of have like, fuck you money, which is like someone walks in and says, yeah, I'll buy this thing, but we're going to do it totally different. And you just say, nah.
Yeah. And I think that all goes back to the intent, because I think people build businesses because they want an exit. Right? They want to build a business that it's going to be attractive to venture capital, because that is, you know, that's the motivation. Either you want the power of owning your own business, or you want a business to be successful because you want the money. Right? I mean, I think it goes back to the intent, but yeah, like my husband always says, money only solves money problems. And, you know, if you find something that that you love and that that gets you excited every day, then yeah, why would you sell that? And, you know, cause what would you do? Right. And I remember a few years back, you know, going back to P. Terry's, you know, it's our identity. And so many people said, oh, you need to do this. You need to do that. You need to add this to your menu. I mean, so many people, and from a good place, right? They meant well, but it goes back to, you know, what is it that we wanted out of it, right? And a few years ago, I remember, Patrick was just exhausted and was like, oh crap, I'm just going to freaking sell it, right? Just write me a check and walk away. And he got really close to selling a majority of the business. And I remember, you know, calling him on the phone. I was out of town with the girls and I was like, don't do it. You know, don't do this, because this is not what you want. This is not your legacy. It's not what you wanted your legacy to be. This is not why we built it. And so we didn't, and, you know, it was the best thing we ever did. Right. And I'm so proud of what we built with P. Terry's. You know, we support our employees. We have interest-free loans. We give them birthday cakes on their birthday. We give Christmas bonuses. We do things that no other fast food restaurant does. Right. We give back to the community. I mean, this year we will have given over $1 million to nonprofits.
That's awesome.
Right. But it's our vision, right? And that's, and that's what it's all about. And that's why, you know, it's like you said, you have to stick to, you know, what fills you up.
Absolutely. 100%. And it can be challenging at times.
Oh yeah.
You know, and get pulled. And so even like, I mean, your story and you guys from a pure time in business, revenue, employees, all of that are so much further ahead mine, but it's so interesting that, you know, you and your husband face the same dilemma as well, just like I did a month ago. You know, right. I mean, I think we're faced with it at all stages of growth, oftentimes at the business or can be.
Oh yeah. Well, even within Loop, people are like, oh, or did you build it because you want to sell it to so-and-so? And I'm like, no, like that's not why I'm here. Right. But I think we're in that world right now where it's all VC, like everything. Oh my gosh. Like, well, and plus there's so much GD money out there, right? Like everybody has a fund now. Everybody wants to invest. And, you know, it drives me crazy because I feel like all of these businesses end up, you know, becoming something that was never the intent, right? And we've all lost our personality and we've all lost our passion. And it worries me. It really does.
It's interesting. I mean, I think that there's always at times like a correction, especially oftentimes when you think about, you know, economics and investments. But it is a worry. It is a challenge. The biggest thing that I would say for people listening that might not know, when you think about like the typical VC model, although there's actually great changes of social impact funds, social impact investors, things of that sort. But, you know, a VC, and I'm talking in broad terms here, if you're going to get VC money, they're looking for that absolute home run. And so they may invest in your business, but from their financial modeling, they're going to invest in 10 or 30 others. And all they really care about is that one of those 10 or one of those 30s becomes the next Uber, and it's going to make up for your loss and the, you know, the 9 others that completely fail. And so they're going to push you to do things to grow your business in a way that is not likely sustainable, that's going to require you to ramp up with employee count, have high burn.
Oh yeah.
You know, all of those things.
Well, because they're looking for an exit, right? Cuz they've you know, they're investing other, you know, they're investing money to make money,
absolutely,
right? And it's all about the model. Like they have a model and there's kids in the office and they're just, you know, checking off boxes, right?
Yep.
And they have no idea how to run businesses, but they're telling you how to run your business, right? Because all they're looking for is the return. And when are we going to get to, you know, when do we get to dump you and make money and go on to the next?
Absolutely. And I, as much as this is said, I mean, and we did not take VC money. When I originally had the concept, looking back on it now, we had nothing. I mean, it was literally a concept, but at the time I felt like we had made a lot of progress and I'm like, all right, we're going to raise money. I could look back at my calendar and like the email invites and all that shit, but I probably had like 70 meetings with quote investors. One of those in particular though was, and we raised no money by the way. I realized two things. One, this firsthand, a friend of mine had set us up with a venture capital group in San Francisco. And we had a couple other meetings. So we flew out there, we land, it's Labor Day, it's the Tuesday after Labor Day weekend. So note to anyone, don't set up meetings the Tuesday after Labor Day weekend. We literally land, the four other meetings get canceled, like check the email, and then we have this one. So I'm like, all right. So we go in. And we're making our presentation. I think at the time we were like pitching to raise like $700,000. And we get to a point like in the slide where we show like the use of funds and they're like, okay, great. And so like, this is your angel round. Like what's your A round? Then what's your B round? I look and go like, we're not going to need an A round. I'm like, the business is great because we're just going to be profitable. And like, you know, da, da, da. They literally threw us out of the office. It was like meetings over. They're like, that's not what we want.
Right.
Get the fuck out of here. I'm not kidding.
No,
I was like, what the fuck? But that legitimately happened to me.
Yeah.
The other flip side that I would just say, like, while I'm on this for any like social entrepreneurs or people, you would not believe it's such an ego thing too. And look, there are great, so I'm giving exceptions, by the way, I want to say this. And I also, when I was talking about the potential person that would acquire us, their ambitions were awesome, by the way. Like, I totally get where they were coming from and all of that. It's just like, is it a fit for me or what I want to do? But so I'm not dogging necessarily investors in general, but giving some points. So what I want to say then is the other side of it is the amount of people that claim in your community to be an angel investor, which means they invested $5,000 3 years ago in one company and they call themselves an angel investor and they'll go and meet with you and they'll take your time and they just want to act like cool and in the know and be seen and all that shit, totally full of crap. So really, I would say anyone that you potentially might meet with, you know, there are stuff like Crunchbase and other things where you can look up, but I would say to them, you know, what are the companies that you've invested to, you know, over the past 24 months, how many investments have you made and what's the amount?
Right.
You know, it was one basic way. There's obviously other ways to kind of pre-qualify, but I wasted so much time. Yeah. I mean, and I'm not, it is what it is because everyone has their own funds. But I mean, I remember sitting down with one of the wealthiest people in Austin. It was their family office and it was the gentleman running that. And so we're sitting down and do my pitch or whatever. And he's like, okay, well, a little bit our fund, like, we typically make investments of $10,000. And I'm like, I was like, that doesn't make sense. He's like, well, what do you mean? He's like, you wouldn't want our money. And I'm like, I'm trying to raise 700,000. Like, you think I want to raise like 10 grand from whatever, 70 people.
And then I have 70 people.
Yeah. I was like, this is like, I'm like, you are like representing a billionaire and you're trying to dispense like 10 grand at a time.
Yeah.
So again, that's their position. Like they've already, that's fine, but not a match for a lot of times with the entrepreneur side. So I just say that as a little bit of a heads up.
Well, it's true. And I think you have to go in knowing that not only are you pitching to them, but you need to let them pitch to you, right? It's a partnership. And you have to make sure whoever you take money from has the same vision that you have and has your back because, quite frankly, they're your partner, right? And so you have to be aligned. And I think so many people want the money and don't really take into account, is this the right person to take the money from? Right? I mean, you can say no. And I think a lot of people get in situations where they've taken money from people and after a while, they're not in alignment. And that just destroys any business, right? And then you become, and also I think people need to realize that when you take money, your role changes, right? Because now not only are you trying to run a business, but now you are managing investors. And so it does take a lot of time from you, the founder, from your business. And so it's way more involved than I think a lot of people know initially going in. And, you know, and when you do take money, I mean, I remember being on a panel with a group of women and, you know, the founder of The Riveter, you know, she said, I mean, it's rocket fuel, right? You got to be ready. Like if you're going to take money from the big VC companies. I mean, they expect action quick. And all of a sudden you may be growing and doing things that you never thought you'd be doing.
100%. And so, boy, I didn't think we'd go there necessarily in this conversation, but I actually love it. And I hope that, you know, part of this podcast is, I mean, really much is about like the people listening, hopefully getting something out of it and, you know, being able to take away some lessons and whatnot. And so, I want to thank you so much for coming on to share your story and, you know, your experiences and kind of riff with me.
Happy to.
Sometimes this is a little bit of like therapy, you know, very much so. In this like overstimulated world, just having like a one-on-one conversation is really refreshing. You know, I want to tell everyone that I highly recommend, just like I did, I downloaded the InLieu app. It was super simple. It's just InLieu is how you spell InLieu. And then you can obviously search for that in the app store, InLieu. What's the web address?
It's InLieu.com.
Perfect.
But then all of our social, right? Mm-hmm. All of our social feeds are GivenLieu.
Got it. And yes, we'll put those in that. But yeah, I'm following you guys right now. I'm going to make sure I am. If I'm
Everybody follow us, download, give. It's, I have to say, it not only do you get a dopamine hit when you give, but you get one when you receive too. So it's,
I think that's super cool. That's actually a really terrific point. about the whole thing. Let me ask you in closing here then, what nonprofit would you in lieu to, in the sense of like, what was the first one when you said you were on the board and you're a friend?
Oh, that was the Safe Alliance.
That's amazing. Yes. We just had them on the podcast, actually.
Oh, great. Yeah. A wonderful organization. But that's the other thing about in lieu is I wanted to create this more authentic, deeper connection with my friends. And so in lieu allows you to save your favorites to your profile. So then it's kind of like, you know, your kind of like your badge, I guess. Like, these are the nonprofits that I support. And so if you want to show up and give to me, this is where I want you to give.
I love it. That's awesome. Well, Kathy, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you.
And thank you to everyone for listening along. Have a great day.